Good morning. You're listening to Community Radio, KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's show, we'll hear from last night's protest against police brutality that happened in Denver. Then we'll hear about an online racial justice forum that's happening this weekend. After that, the ACLU of Colorado yesterday filed a lawsuit against Governor Jared Polis and the Department of Corrections to compel them to prioritize releasing medically vulnerable, non-violent prisoners in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. One prison in Sterling has had two prisoners die from the virus and more than 500 test positive. We'll round out this morning's magazine with Trends Diary. Then Roger Wendell is in for Connections. Today, his guest is Tom Hartman, host of the Tom Hartman Radio Show, which we broadcast on Wednesday afternoons. They'll be speaking about Tom's new book, The War on Voting. But first, the latest local headlines. Police fired tear gas and pepper balls at protesters in downtown Denver last night. People had gathered as part of a nationwide movement calling for an end to the killing of black men at the hands of police in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. Tear gas canisters could be heard going off in downtown Denver. The Denverite reports that about 1,000 people began a peaceful march through downtown, holding signs like Black Lives Matter and I Can't Breathe. A small group splintered off and blocked traffic. Later, protesters were then met with police officers who wore helmets and wielded pepper ball guns and tear gas canisters. Another small group of protesters crossed Interstate 25 and stopped traffic on the highway. While the vast majority of protesters were peaceful, a small group is accused of smashing cars at the parking lot at the state capitol. At one point, a black SUV, which had turned left onto Broadway, ran over a protester. The Denverite reports that police are investigating that. We'll hear more sounds from last night after headlines. The National Guard is standing down from its role in homeless shelters. Steve Miller has more.
Most of the 250 National Guard troops staffing some of Denver's homeless shelters will pull out of their post Monday, leaving already understaffed nonprofits in the city to fill the gap. The Denver Post reports that the city has tried to provide more space in their shelters to curb the spread of the virus, but 341 people that are homeless have tested positive for COVID-19. Six have died. The city and partnering nonprofits like the Denver Rescue Mission are hiring staff to step in for the National Guard once they leave. They are looking for more people every day, especially volunteers who can work meal shifts. 2 months ago, Governor Jared Polis ordered the troops to staff existing homeless shelters. This allowed city officials and nonprofits to shift their workers from the existing shelters to the new group shelters at the National Western Complex's Hall of Education and the Denver Coliseum. The first cases of the virus hit the homeless population at the end of March. The homeless population makes up about 0.5% of Denver's population, but accounts for nearly 7% of the city's overall COVID-19 cases. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Warm and sunny today, highs in the mid-80s with a chance of showers in the afternoon, and warm temperatures ahead for the weekend. As we heard in headlines, protesters in Denver were last night met with tear gas and pepper balls from police as they marched through downtown as part of a nationwide action decrying police brutality. KGNU's Dave Ashton was there towards the end of the evening. We'll hear voices and sounds, including the sounds of pepper balls and tear gas canisters being fired.
Helicopters crisscrossing overhead, getting closer to the park. We know this smell. It's tear gas. Tear gas coming out from the Civic Center, floating across. And people are pushing out this way. Cars zinging back and forth. Some playing a famous NWA song. Were you guys out there when the tear gas got bombed? What was going on in the park right here?
We were just sitting there rioting, and then they threw out the gas or whatever, the tear gas.
Were you guys just like chanting and just demonstrating?
Yeah, we were. And then it just, they just started throwing stuff and shooting people with their paintball guns or whatever.
Like rubber bullets?
Yeah.
No, they shot out like the tear gas pretty much. But they shot out multiple ones of them and like a lot in one little area. And that's why probably this whole block right here is just filled with it, because that's exactly where they shot them, was in this general area.
They just shot them in the street on Lincoln here?
They shot them in the street. They shot them in the park, on the Capitol's Park. And then, they shot them in Lincoln. And then I think they shot more down towards 14th, I think that is.
How many people would you say were out here?
I don't know. Maybe, at least a few hundred.
But what do you think, like, was the catalyst for the police to do it? Did they say anything beforehand, or did they just bust out like that?
No, they everybody was kind of just yelling at each other. A couple of them took off their masks, thinking that they made us think that they were going to surrender, and they didn't. They kind of just started bum rushing us, and then boom, they shot it at us.
So they came running with like shields and batons?
No, they just kind of all ran towards us with their guns, and everybody was just like, all right, and then they just shot anyway.
Did people just start running out of there?
Yeah, some did. Some stood and fought, but some stood ran out.
Like
a lot of people were
down,
throwing stuff at them and throwing bottles and stuff like that at them. So,
well, it looks like the crowd size down here has definitely decreased. Another canister of tear gas I just heard go off towards the Colfax side. There are emergency vehicles out here. Somebody's getting loaded into a stretcher. There's more cop cars than I can count. Looks like the main conflict is pushing down Lincoln past Colfax. This side on 14th has cleared out considerably. You heard that one. I can tell you folks, your regular COVID mask don't do nothing for this pepper spray. These bombs they're releasing out here. This gas is serious. I'm out of here.
KGNU's Dave Ashton reporting last night from downtown Denver, and we'll post photos at news.kgnu.org. 10 membership-based organizations have come together to put on a virtual racial justice forum to put information out into the community about the U.S. Senate race and the candidates who are running. The coalition was formed to address the current moment of racial tensions that are on the rise. KGNU's Rosanna Longo reports.
In this time of social distancing, we don't want to get anyone sick or put anyone in health danger, but we do want to get information out about the U.S. Senate race and about the candidates who are running. Before I go into a lot of detail about the forum, I'd like to just sort of acknowledge the collaboration, the coalition that is coming together to put this racial justice forum on. It's groups like the United for a New Economy Action Fund, the Colorado Black Women for Political Action, Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition, their action fund, Colorado Latino and Latina Forum, Colorado Action, Colorado Color Action Fund, Colorado People's Action, Colorado Rising, SEIU Local 105, and my organization, the Colorado Working Families Party. These 10 organizations came together specifically because of the moment that we're in. There's always been racial tensions in our country, but it seems more recently there's a rise in white supremacy and rise in racial tensions. It feels like every other week we're seeing a new video of, unfortunately, an African-American being harassed by the police, or sometimes even being killed by the police, like the most recent video. And even like in broad daylight, African-American men being chased down and literally lynched in the streets. We see on the border, children being locked in cages, families being separated. Our very own president is promoting this idea of racial intolerance of Asian folks and trying to blame them for COVID-19. And then on the micro level, our reservations are becoming hotspots for COVID. Many working people across the country and in our state who are on the brink of economic despair, even before this COVID crisis are now being pushed over into abject poverty. And so we want to see a government that is represented by the people and representative of the people, not just of wealthy and special corporate interests. And that's why this forum is important, and that's why we want to hold the elected officials who are participating in this forum accountable and ask them some really tough questions to address the needs that our communities are facing here and today.
Needs that are urgent, especially now with COVID-19, when our communities of color are the ones in the front lines.
Absolutely. And you probably know these statistics, but specifically here in Colorado, Latino folks make up about 21% of the population, yet they represent about 36% of the COVID cases in the state. The African American community represents less than 4% of the population, but are making up over 6% of the COVID cases. Down on our reservations, COVID cases are exploding in astronomical numbers. And so, yes, these things are affecting our communities. The actual virus is affecting our communities tremendously. But then when we look at the economic impact on our communities, well, of course, it is African Americans and Latinos and folks of color who are primarily in low-wage jobs that are on the front lines, exposed every single day. It's grocery store workers, it's nurses. These folks will be at this forum. The beautiful thing about our forum is that all the groups that have put this together are what are called membership-led organizations. That means that our members make the decisions on our policies and for our organization. And so it will be our members who are going to be directly asking the candidates questions. They're going to be sharing their story and then asking candidates to respond to specific questions around racial justice policy.
I'm speaking with Carlos Valverde, and we are talking about this forum that just got organized about racial justice. And it is a collaborative, bringing together grassroots movements that are really trying to put a highlight in this situation that is affecting us all, I think. If we are feeling, people of color, we are feeling this tension. It is spreading all over. It's not only around us, but it affects us all.
That's exactly right. And that's why we think educational forums and like this are important. But it won't just stop here. So yes, we want to get information out. We want to ask the candidates very tough questions. But for the groups that are part of this collaborative, part of this coalition, and the work doesn't stop here. So the next step will be to take these responses and spread them even further. We want to engage in outreach to our communities to make sure that not only is their voice heard in this forum, but their voice is heard at the ballot box. So collectively, the 10 organizations who are putting this forum on are going to reach out to over 250,000 voters across the state, primarily focused on communities of color, and educate them on the issues that they will be voting on. Ballots will be dropping in less than 10 days. And so this is an urgent issue, and our communities need to have really good information to base their decisions on.
It's an urgent moment in time. What's the plan of trying to bridge those communities that do not have access to technology or the time?
Our members are working class people. And so, yeah, most of them have jobs during the day. And sometimes, you know, even Saturdays, they might be working. So even though we're doing this on Saturday, we know we're not going to reach everyone. So this forum will be recorded, and folks can go back on Facebook later on and review this forum and listen to the answers and the questions that are being asked. But then the outreach part after this forum is super important. And like you said, yeah, a lot of our communities don't have consistent access to technology. So what we do is we like to have voice communications. In the ideal world, we would be knocking on folks' doors, but in a COVID reality, we're not going to be able to do that this particular election cycle. So we're going to be calling lots of our members, having discussions with them about it. For those that we can't get on the phone immediately, we're going to send them text messages with the link to check out the video after the forum is over, and then have conversations about them and encourage them to make sure that their voice is heard at the ballot box as well.
Would you like also to speak about who's going to be participating in the forum?
Absolutely. So we did invite the candidates from the two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. Unfortunately, current U.S. Senator Cory Gardner, he has not responded our invitation, but the two Democratic candidates have. The former Speaker of the House, Andrew Romanoff, and Governor John Hickenlooper will be present. And we're really excited because this is one of the first forums where both candidates will actually be present and answering questions.
I would like also, Carlos, if you can give us your final thoughts about the urgency of this forum?
This election cycle will be the most important election cycle in most of our lifetimes. What's at stake are things like the U.S. Supreme Court, Federal District Court, whether or not children will be continue to be allowed to be locked in cages at the border. Many things are at stake this election cycle. And so good information, asking tough questions of the folks who are running to represent us, this is critically important in this moment in time. This is on the backdrop of perhaps the most significant economic crisis in our country since the Great Depression. So lots of people, these questions, whether they're specific to racial justice, these questions really would apply to any community group out there. All people should be interested in these questions that we're going to be asking. And for folks of color, like, our issues aren't just about race. We care about health care. We care about education. We care about criminal justice reform. And we care about the economy. So all of our questions will be, those elements will be woven into the questions that our members ask, because these are important to everybody, not just folks of color, but everybody. So we really encourage anyone out there to listen into this forum. It's going to be available to the public. You can go to the Colorado Working Families Facebook page and sign up right there. It is completely free, no charge. We look to have as many folks as possible to get this excellent information.
I have been speaking with Carlos Valverde, Southwest Regional Director of Working Families Party. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
The ACLU of Colorado yesterday filed a class action lawsuit against Governor Jared Polis and the Department of Corrections, seeking an emergency order to compel the DOC to protect medically vulnerable incarcerated people from COVID-19. Erica Grossman, an attorney with the ACLU, says that the lawsuit is asking the DOC to prioritize releasing people who are older, sick, or otherwise vulnerable to serious illness or death from COVID-19 and who pose no threat to public safety.
So this is a class action on behalf of medically vulnerable people, and we all know here experiencing the pandemic that people who are older and have certain underlying conditions are very, very, very highly at risk for severe illness and death from COVID-19. And there are, and jails and prisons are epicenters and hotbeds of these outbreaks. And there are many, many people who are in prison who are, you know, not a danger to the community, but sitting there medically vulnerable, and it's, you know, terrifying each day as they're there. So we brought a lawsuit in order to make the Department of Corrections do its job, as they've said that they know was necessary to save lives, which is reduce the population of the people in its custody immediately.
But Governor Polis has made statements around this issue and really recognizing the need to reduce prison populations. And I know there was an executive order, but that now is not being extended. So take us through some of the actions that the state has or has not taken.
So originally it looked as if Governor Polis was, you know, trying to do his job and reduce the prison population, and did indeed give executive orders that gave the Department of Corrections broad authority to consider people that needed to be released or transferred to alternative forms of detention. And he gave executive orders giving that authority. But those were only for a couple months, and then he intentionally took that away, took away a lot of, the DOC still has authority, but he took away a lot of the authority that would allow, that gave him even more discretion on being able to quickly review and release or transfer people sufficiently to save lives. And so, you know, I can't, I don't exactly know why he did that, but he did that knowing that was the only way that we can effectively mitigate some of the risk for these people that are in jail or in prison. And now the CDOC has less authority to do so.
This is a class action lawsuit, as you mentioned, but there are very real people and real circumstances behind this. Give us a sense of some of the folks and the conditions that people are suffering through now in terms of their own medical situation, and how all of this has been so much more exacerbated and has become so much more critical because of the current pandemic.
Yeah, sure. So one, you know, the Gary Winston, who was at Sterling Correctional Facility, is a perfect example. He is an older man who was there for 1 year serving a sentence for possession of drugs. He's not a danger. He has no victim. This is a drug crime. His wife of 22 years is at home battling cancer. He has severe respiratory issues, and there's no reason for him to be there. And basically, he's, you know, in a prison in which he can't get the treatment he needs for his respiratory issues, and where hundreds of people around him have an infection, have a deadly virus to someone like him. And you know, you can't, as we all sit here, being able to physically distance, constantly wash our hands, you know, sanitize everything, and stay away from medically vulnerable people. He basically doesn't have that opportunity at all, and instead is just sitting there unable to take care of himself and not knowing what's going to happen next. And there's just no reason for him to be there.
Erica Grossman, an attorney with the ACLU of Colorado, speaking about the class action suit that they filed against Governor Polis and the Department of Corrections on Thursday. It's time now for Trent's Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, this is Roberta Walbert.
And Gary Shunk.
And we're here to share our story, Living and Breathing Home-Sewn Masks. I was having a hard time at the beginning of the pandemic because of my PTSD. I was having nightmares again, and I was not sleeping well. One day I remembered that I have a sewing machine. I have fabric. I can make masks.
Once Roberta brought it up, I wanted to help. I can't sew, but I can cut a pattern. I can iron.
We're using my maternal grandmother's 1957 Singer sewing machine, and it's a beast.
So I'm in charge of ironing the fabric, laying out the templates, tracing the templates, cutting the linings and the outer layers, and then Roberta takes it from there.
We've gotten fabric donated, elastic donated. People are just donating left and right. But if someone insists on giving us a donation, we'll take it. We don't let anyone who is struggling pay. Every time we hand out one, we get a request for 5 more. I had to go to the phone store the other day for a repair. I gave each of the workers a mask because they were in customer service with no protection. It seems like there's still a lot of need. We have a running list of requests and deliveries. One of my friends took one each for herself and her husband, who works at Warren Village, a nonprofit single-parent housing community in Denver. He asked for 100 masks, so we started on those.
Since then, we've filled almost 100 masks for the Hopi and Navajo Nation in Arizona.
We're about to donate to a group in Tijuana of 60 families.
I'm totally grooving on it. It's like a working meditation. When I'm focused and being present, I'm not in my head, I'm not worried about things, I'm really enjoying it.
It's taking so much energy. We wake up, we live and breathe masks all day until we're about to drop. I've hardly thought about the virus. I love doing this. It fills my heart.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Scott Yates, and this is my story, A High-Proof Solution. I'm the founder and president of Mythology Distillery. We're a whiskey, gin, vodka, and rum distillery based in Colorado. Similar to many other Colorado distilleries, we switched our production to hand sanitizer to help first responders and organizations in need. We have a number of family members that are emergency room doctors, and we are finding out that they don't have access to the sanitizer. There's a mass shortage because there's a lack of high-proof alcohol. And as a distillery, we make high-proof alcohol, so we had the unique ability to help. Previously, I was an affordable housing developer, and I know a lot of groups that help at-risk communities. I was talking to another affordable housing developer, Andy Allison, and Isabella McDevitt, who's the head of the Boulder nonprofit Bridge House that helps unhoused individuals with employment. Those people that they help are folks that don't have access to wash their hands after every interaction. So we have donated sanitizer to Bridge House for their clients. In addition to hand sanitizer, we made a significant monetary donation to Operation Family Meal to provide free meals to people from the service industry. We're also helping our restaurant and bar accounts in various ways. It's been really rewarding work. We've donated to doctors, nurses, police officers, the military, firefighters, at-risk communities, and hospital workers. They all give us this incredibly genuine thank you for what we're trying to do, and it's given us an added purpose right now. As a small business owner, it's beyond words to see people come together and try to help. Owning a business, we deal and adapt to disruptions all the time. Not like this, but there's always something to handle, and this is our time to shine and help the community.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thanks for listening to The Morning Magazine here on KGNU.